You're listening to The Stormcast, stories of generosity in the midst of disaster. Join Reverend Dr. Art McClanahan as he explores the impact of Hurricane Florence and how United Methodist Churches in North Carolina are making a difference in their communities.
Have the opportunity to talk to Julia Royal, who is the Director of Youth and Children's Ministries at Ann Street United Methodist Church. You had kind of a harrowing experience as Hurricane Florence brewed and then came on shore. Talk about what your life was like during those first few days.
Well, I evacuated to stay with some family about 2 hours away. I was gone for almost a week. It was a pretty rough week. The storm really didn't affect where I had evacuated, thank goodness. I was in Raleigh, and it sort of turned down to South Carolina. So it felt very normal there, and so that was very odd to be somewhere that wasn't that far away, but that felt very normal weather-wise and people going on with their business. But, you know, to be in yearning to be with my congregation, my kids, my home. I recently bought a house in the area in May, my first house. So to leave those things was difficult. It was much more difficult than I thought. And to add to that, my boyfriend is a fireman here in Beaufort where we live, and he had to stay. So they had to stay and be locked down. So I took his dog, myself, went to my sister's apartment with anything that I thought was important, and camped out in a studio for a week, which was also had its challenges. But so it was an odd time, but I was able to return fairly quickly. The storm kind of passed through Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and I was able to get back on Monday. Eastern North Carolina has a long history of flooding in the coastal plains. It's pretty flat. After 30 miles outside of Raleigh, it's flat to the coast. So there's a lot of place for that water to go. And I knew that because I've grown up here. So I wanted to get back before the rivers flooded, because then I would be stuck in Raleigh for even longer. So I headed up, loaded up, and headed home. While I was in Raleigh, evacuated, I had a couple friends who had bought a lot of hurricane supplies because they thought they might be out of power for a while or whatever, and it didn't come to Raleigh. So quite a few people called me and texted me and asked me if I could take their extra cases of water or food. We have been seeing on the news how bad it had been where I lived, and after about four or five of these phone calls, I realized there must be lots of people that are having this thought. And so my sister and I took a leap of faith and decided to rent a U-Haul on our own dime and see if we could fill it up. So we made some videos on Facebook that have quite a few views now. One of them, I think, has 35,000 views. So they went, they got very popular very quick, and we were able to fill up that U-Haul on Sunday before I left on Monday in 5 hours, full of supplies. So that was really great. And many people donated money. They just gave me money. And so what I did with that was I went to Costco in Raleigh on Monday morning, and I bought hot dogs, hamburgers, buns, fixings, anything I could fit in my cooler. I brought one cooler with me to Raleigh, and the biggest one I had. So I filled it up with the money, and I called my people back in Beaufort, who at this point hadn't had power for 5 days, and I said, bring your grills to the church, and I've got hot dogs and hamburgers. I'll keep them cold from Raleigh, and we'll have a grill out. And it was just really cool to pull up to my church, and everybody was waiting for me, and they were so excited to have a hot meal. You know, most of them had kind of been eating, you know, hurricane supplies. 5 days is a long time on hurricane supply food. So it was really great. And also that tradition of eating together, having a meal together, being in fellowship with one another. I think we really needed that a lot more than we realized at the time. And so we had a meal And I opened up the back of the U-Haul, and a couple people from the area had gathered down, smelled the food, came and ate, and took some of our supplies. It wasn't really very organized, so we were just sort of pulling stuff out, what we could find. It was in there because I packed it, and I was like, there's much more. They would say, well, we need this, we need that. And I say, well, there's much more back here. I just can't get to all of it yet. So I said, come back tomorrow, and we'll pull it all out. And so the next morning, still no power, and everybody was came down to the church, met me there at 10 o'clock. We unloaded the U-Haul and put it all out on tables outside and just sort of told people, like, by word of mouth, you know, between Monday evening and Tuesday morning, the few people that had trickled down had spread the word. And so many people came, which was awesome. And we actually offloaded all of the items from the U-Haul by lunch. It was all gone. People were pretty hungry. When you think about saving food for a week or so, not everyone has the means to buy food for that long. Or if you do, no stores were open yet. Nothing was open. It would be actually almost another week till the grocery stores would open. And so, I mean, I probably wouldn't myself have planned on buying food for me for 2 weeks, 10 days. That's a long time. And we were able to give out all that food. And so I was in constant communication with my pastor, Pastor Taylor Mills, who was still evacuated in Cary. He wasn't able to get back yet. And, you know, I just said, more people are calling. They're asking when they come down to check on their second homes, the heavy vacation rental area, or can they bring stuff down just on their own accord if they can get here? Or people in the area who had generators that maybe didn't need all the food that they bought. And he said, I think we should do a store. Let's just do a free store. And I said, I think that's great. So that's kind of chapter one.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have any questions about anything that I said or...
Talk a little bit about the free store experience.
Yeah, so the next thing we did was have the free store, and it was one of the most amazing things that I've ever seen or been a part of. And while it was happening, it seemed very fast and a lot of little details that I was attending to. But now that I've been able to get a little time back from it, and I imagine that the things that we experienced in the store will continue to impact me for the rest of my life and many of the people who were a part of it. But we started with picking some hours and just telling people. And the main way we told people is through Facebook or texting or calling, word of mouth. Cell service down here is pretty bad anyway, but at this point in time, many communications have been knocked out. Now, I could get cell service sometimes, but I still didn't have power at my own house. And so we were just kind of triaging our communications as best we could. But it didn't take long for people to understand and realize what we were doing. And Taylor was a really big help on that because he was still in Cary, and he was able to communicate with many partners across our conference, across the state, and really across the world, to be honest, about how to get stuff to us. So kind of a group effort on all accounts, but as we picked the hours, we picked 10 to 4. We asked people to commit to two different shifts, either 10 to 1 or 1 to 4, and we accepted donations during that time and had the free store open during that time. And we set our fellowship hall up kind of like a grocery store. But instead of aisles, we had tables, and they were categorized with the different things that people might need, like water, food, hygiene products, cleaning products, baby items, kids' toys, clothes, and a few building supplies. We'd get those every now and then. Yard tools, tarps, things like that. And so paper goods. And so as people would bring stuff in, the ladies that were working the store would separate them in my youth group, because my kids were out of school for 2.5 weeks. Many of them were there in the first couple of days of the store, and they would be the heavy lifting. They would unload and bring it in. The ladies would organize it, and simultaneously while that was going on, we would have a welcome crew, someone outside to sort of, if we got too many in there at one time, they would sort of keep the flow of how people were going in and out. And then we'd have people right at the door as you entered the fellowship hall giving you a bag and pointing, asking you what your needs were and pointing you to the direction of the items that might best help you and help serve that need. And so we started with people bringing carloads, and then it developed into people bringing truckloads, and then even some 18-wheeler loads, which was really, really amazing. We had donations from Virginia, from South Carolina, from Georgia, from Tennessee. We had people that I went to high school with that brought their wrestling team. My friend's a high school wrestling coach. They brought their wrestling team with a car full of donated supplies, and the wrestlers came down and did a day of work. We had a guy that, two guys that I grew up with that were doing a big concert that was already scheduled, and since the hurricane really didn't hit Raleigh, like I said, they continued on with their concert, and they decided to accept donations during the concert. And one of our other friends owns a tractor trailer company, and so he donated the tractor trailer and his time to drive it down here to us. The other gentleman gathered supplies at the concert, and then they were able to bring an 18-wheeler here full of supplies. And so it was just, and then we were also accepting Amazon donations. So it took about a week and a half for the mail to start again. But we were encouraging people to do those Amazon or mail donations as well, because we knew that we would continue to have a need. And so it was kind of all these things happening at one time, people donating supplies, people gathering supplies, people fellowshipping, people meeting their neighbors that they didn't know, people meeting people in the community that maybe they didn't know lived here or weren't aware that. I think that we live in a really beautiful historic area that has a lot of tourism and a lot of visitors, and so sometimes the poverty that is here isn't always evident. And I think that's just the nature of living in a tourist area. And it's just kind of how things happen. But I think that some of that exposure, for lack of better words, to the poverty that's in our own community was really eye-opening to a lot of people. It was for me. I mean, I live here, I work here, I help with nonprofits, I'm involved in the community addiction recovery center, a domestic violence center, and even I really wasn't as aware of the people living right on that margin, you know. And all it takes is one little event like this. It's not a little event, but all it takes is one thing to push you in that area where you're not able to do for yourself. And so I think maybe the amount of people that I didn't realize that were in that marginal or right on that line that are in our own community was really astounding. It was eye-opening. And, you know, now that I know, I can't unknow. But that's a blessing. So, and many of us feel that way. And it's inspired us to continue with some other new projects that we think that our church can do. But we talked about how our church is this white church in historic, I mean, the building is white, but it's also mostly white people that go here. And it's here in the middle of downtown Beaufort. And in some ways, you know, this steeple that you can see from anywhere, you can see it over the bridge when you come into town, it is sort of like a beacon of hope. Where it is, the lightness of the building, the highness of the steeple, you know, being able to live that out, not just as a symbol, but being able to live that out in our own community was a huge blessing. And to be able to walk across some of those lines and dividers that we as humans all naturally make, but that we have to constantly make sure we're tearing down and erasing and moving through and moving past. What a wonderful opportunity to just bust through so many of those things that keep us separate. And it was really, really great to be able to serve our community and be together. And we had several people who would come into the store, and I know that they needed more. I know that they did, and they would take less because they wanted to share, or they would come every day. So instead of taking a bunch for the whole week, they'd just come every day and get a little bit. And then we'd have people that would come, get what they needed one day, and come back the next day and volunteer. Or if we had a big load and we had to not let people come in for a few minutes while we unloaded and organized, the people that were waiting would get up and help us unload. I mean, it was just a really, it didn't feel like we were giving and other people were taking. It felt like we all were doing it all together. It was really beautiful that you couldn't tell the difference between the people that were taking the items or the people that were helping or the people that were donating. It all sort of merged together at one point, which was really very beautiful.
It's an amazing story of community. One question I have that comes up based on what you've just said is that it seems like people came out of their shells. They knew that everybody was in the same circumstance and that there was something that everyone could contribute for the overall good of everyone. Now that the storm is kind of in the rearview mirror by quite a number of weeks, do you see that kind of ebbing away, or has there been an ongoing positive impact on the community?
I think it's been an ongoing positive impact on the community. We've moved forward to new things, but I don't feel like the generosity or camaraderie that we have experienced in coming together has waned. I mean, some of it naturally has to, right? Because people go back to work, kids go back to school, so there's not as many people here. So maybe it feels that way sometimes. But every time someone gets a chance, every time someone is able, they continue to step up. We've moved on to hosting work teams, which is a huge coordinated effort with many of our volunteers. They piece together the week, and they have someone in there every day, Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30, just like our office hours. Answering phone calls, putting together teams, doing assessments on housing, and coordinating work teams. And I mean, that's a huge undertaking, especially for anyone who that's not your job. It's not your full-time job. Many of our, it's also a big retirement area, so many of our congregation members are retirees, and so they have more flexibility, but it doesn't mean they have no life, or they don't have their own homes to put back together, or their own children's homes or grandchildren's home, whatever they have going on, you know. But I think that community and that spirit of generosity has continued. I see it in financial donations that continue to pour in. Maybe people can't be here anymore because they've had to go back to work or go back home, but they are still supporting us with their prayers, with their finances, and with their free time when they are here, and with donations and with their time. We've had a lot of, you know, property damage, and we also are experiencing a housing crisis. And so the way people have opened up their homes to let people stay with them, the way that people have offered their second homes here as off-season or short-term rentals when they don't normally do that, just the ways in which we can be generous, I think, is really infinite and abundant. And God gives us that opportunity all the time, but most of the time we don't take it because we're busy or we don't see it or we don't think we can do it. But I've seen so many people in this situation say yes instead of no, say, yes, I'm afraid, but yes. Yes, I'm not sure, but yes. It's not always, yes, I'm so excited. You know, sometimes it comes with hesitation and reservation. But I've seen so much of that, that it's really beautiful and wonderful. And I don't know, sometimes, I mean, the hurricane was horrible, and everything that we've experienced is really, it is a disaster. That's what it is. But the things that I've been able to experience and see and be a part of have blessed me beyond measure, I would say.
So it sounds like it was an experience that nobody would ever want to repeat again, and yet there have been some good gifts that have come out of that in terms of understanding that we're not separate, that we're together, that each person has something that they can contribute to someone else. And it sounds like there's been a real gift of community that's gone beyond the walls of Ann Street to the entire community of Beaufort.
Yes, I would definitely agree with all that. And that community support continues. You know, as our kids have gone back to school, we have identified many who have been underserved, not for lack of trying, but, you know, it's a combination of things. People don't want to ask for help, or people are available to receive the resources that are here. They can't drive to them, or they don't know where to go to get them. So, you know, that's sort of the next wave. And we have a wonderful public school foundation. So it's separate from the schools, but it's a foundation. And they've been case managed. They've been doing case management and need-based giving. And I was at a group meeting with many other nonprofit, faith-based organizations, community leaders, and government officials. And they've already given $90,000 away in aid and need in the form of maybe rental help, utility help, or the repurchasing of physical goods or clothes or material possessions. And I mean, that's really amazing. And they'll give more than that. And they're only able to do that because of people's generous donations. And so, you know, we've got that partner going. We've got people working on the housing issue. You know, we sort of started myself, a young lady in town who's a freelance writer, and another one who's a lawyer. And we sort of found that we had been getting and doing a lot of the same things, so we decided to get together and work on the housing issue. And so we created an intake form, and then we asked people to contact us when they have housing available, and we created a Facebook group, and we, you know, in our spare time, match people up their needs based on the availability. And that's an ongoing situation. I've just had 3 new available properties made known to me today. And so many different, and you know, one of those girls is agnostic, one of them is Reform, she's a Reform Jew, and I work at the Methodist Church. So what a beautiful way to show the diversity of God's kingdom, even when we are least expecting it.
It sounds like
you're welcome.
It's been a life-transforming experience in all kinds of ways. And that it's one that's not known boundaries or borders, but rather through the tragic initial circumstances has opened up to a whole new life experience for you, for people at Ann Street, and for the community in a way that will help you all to grow together, to be aware of each other's needs, and to make a difference in the lives of each other.
Yes. I definitely agree with that. We actually just last week got together with many other faith-based organizations and nonprofits and government people. We're going to form a long-term recovery group through all these different partnerships that we've made through this experience, and continue to help in long-term recovery efforts. But we're also going to keep that group set up for next time, you know, and let it be a preventative entity as well. So if this happens again, which, you know, we live at the beach, it's likely that it will, even though I hope it won't, but it, you know, statistically is likely that it will, that we will continue to form these partnerships and relationships, because You know, as we all know, you know, God at its core is a relationship. God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. I mean, that the Trinity is a relationship, you know? And so that's how I think we as humans best function. And I think that we've seen the power of those relationships, that relationship building through this disaster. And we want to continue those relationships that have started through something pretty tragically, not just for the event of that it might happen again, but for the fact that we enjoy being around each other and we understand each other and we've gone through this together. And so we know what that's like.
Sure.
We have each other's back.
Sure. Well, Julia, thank you so much. And thank you to the Ann Street community and the people who
thank
are doing
you.
Great things in Beaufort. And blessings on all of you.
Thanks for listening to the Stormcast. If you'd like to give to North Carolina Conference Disaster Response, visit nccumc.org/disaster, where 100% of your gift goes towards response in North Carolina. Thank you to Reverend Dr. Art McClanahan and the Iowa Conference for giving time to make this podcast episode. To hear more stories of generosity and our other podcast, visit nccumc.fm.